A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This podcast is a Roifield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
Well, here we are. I'm Donald, often known as Turbrech on Twitter. 60-year-old farmer from Fife. I sell eggs, free-range eggs. That's not really why I'm calling. I'm calling because I want to take you back to around about 1975. We're in an upstairs bar in a student union in Edinburgh. The room is full of young men, too few women, alas, and we're singing songs. Some of the songs are positively indecent, and I have chosen not to remember any of them. But one song stands out. It's The Music Man, and one particular verse rings true. I'll try to sing it. I am the music man, I come from down your way. What can you play? What can you play? Now there's a pause here. It could be cows or it could be whales even. That was a memorable verse. But in this instance, what can you play precedes the archers, the archers. Dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dum-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum.
You know we love you and all that, and you love us and all that. Well, please, 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 can you vote for us? On the Listener Choice Award, or the British Podcast Awards, which is at britishpodcastawards.com/vote. Now, there it's quite at the bottom, it says search for the podcast, and I'm going to do it now. I'm not allowed to vote for myself more than once because that would be bad. You have to be extremely picky about how you type it in, otherwise, the stupid thing doesn't recognize it. So you have to write dum-ti-dum.
As one word.
As one word with a capital D. Otherwise, it gives you a load of guff that is not us. Mm. So if you could do that, we would thank you from the heart of our bottoms.
And you don't have to be, they don't have to be British, do they, to vote?
They don't have to be what?
British.
No. The podcast has to be British, but you do not.
All right. So
for
next
Brexit resupply.
So please vote, because that would just be lovely.
It would. Sad news first. Kate got in touch to tell us of the very sad death of John the Seventh at the age of 82 after a short illness. We are very sorry to hear that, Kate, and lots of love to you and your mum from us and all the other Dumpty Dummers.
This is Dumpty Dum, the show about the reality docudrama that is centred on Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I'm the Wedgwood saucer, that is Roifield Brown, and with me I have the crack teapot, that is
Lucy Freeman.
And the last part of our second best China, folks, is you. Second best China, is that Taiwan?
So, well, someone said, is that something to do with Trump? Being second best nation.
You know what? Being as I've just done a little bit of a geographical joke, I know I shouldn't do this, and I was going to do this at the end, but thank you for my maps this week. I had four maps this week. One from Witherspoon, a gin making map of Scotland from Jane Rolfe and Denise Tomlinson. Sorry, Dusty. Where are the green sheep? A beautiful old map of Australia where the sheep live. Glyn Fullerlove actually won map of the week. Lucy, check this one out. A map of how nearly every European country names syphilis after its neighbour. Let that sink in. Yeah, exactly. So in England, you called it the French disease. In Germany, you called it the Polish disease. It's an amazing map of the week, Glyn. And I also had another incredible map, an Ottoman map of the United States from 1803 that includes the states and the names of the Native American tribes. Keep the maps are coming. And that's from Tessa Herring, by the way. Keep the maps are coming, folks. They don't have enlivened my timeline. But Lucy, we're not a show about maps per se, are we?
I'm to be honest, I'm never sure, but I don't think so. No.
This week's Dumb-de-dum. Who is it? Is it Mr. Turbrecht again?
It could be.
Yeah,
could be the Academic Archers. Could be whoever you fancy.
Well, I fancy him at the moment. Okay. Right, great. Right. So that's what you listen to, folks. But if somebody would like to send in a dum-de-dum, Luce, how can they do that?
If you would like to sing us a dum-de-dum, leave us a plot prediction or start a row about the definition of the word flibbertigibbet on Twitter. Call us on 0203 133 105 or leave us a message on SpeakPipe. Thanks to Cosmo for his podcast roundups and doing the Dumpty Dogs, Shed Code for sponsoring us, and to Derek for loaning the back bedroom. Derek loves a dog show. So he's been to London this week. And he entered a German shepherd called Hans. And after that, he went to Krakow.
Well done. Well done, you. On this week's episode, we have calls from Claire from Clapham, who I actually kind of know a little bit now, who wanted Cownage. Judy from Pickering, who finally has use of her second best china. Glyn, full of love, who wants a Brighton update. Claire, who's relieved for Lillian. Andrew, who wants to keep death off the roads. And you need a Green Cross code man for that. And Goddess Diva, who says love is all good. But first, before the caller inners, let's have the top of the shop, the best bit of the show. It's Lucy V. Freeman's Week in Ambridge.
We started the week with Krusty going to get right up her nose at Miranda because the spinny thing in the loos wasn't working. Working as a spa manager in a 5-star rural luxury hotel is probably not the best vantage point from which to launch your career as a pugnacious class warrior, Krusty. Miranda then insisted on speaking to Kathy Perks. I'm sorry, Mrs. Elliot, but Mrs. Perks is unavailable. She developed a speaking disorder about 18 months ago, which rendered her mute and invisible. So performing any sort of disciplinary will be extremely challenging. She then took her bad mood over to the stables, where she told Lillian that she was putting her foot down right on Justin's wrinkly little nuts. In a little exchange that I refuse to believe was not written with this monologue in mind, Shula asked Lillian if she was ready for the girth. I'm not sure, said Lillian, but pass me the saddle oil and I'll give it a go. Once Lillian was comfortable, Shula expressed her shock and outrage at the fact that Lillian enjoyed the physical side of life with Justin. Just because your idea of heated passion with Alistair is when you warm his corn plasters on the radiator, don't knock anyone that likes a bit of how's your father, Shula, even if it is with Baron Hardup. Poor Lillian. Everyone's a critic. Brian, the serial philanderer and father of illegitimate children, was outraged at the way Lillian was carrying on. It's disgusting, he said jealously. Then Lillian, with a hangover of apocalyptic proportions, was summoned to Death Knell Cottage by Peggy, who hit Lillian over the head with her checkbook until she promised to keep her knees together for the rest of time and died a lonely and frigid old age. Don't beat about the bush with me, Lillian, said Peggy. No, mum, that's what Justin's for, said Lillian, hiccuping into the second best china. Mr. and Mrs. De Freitas are proving to be a bit of a handful as she performed a Brazilian in the ensuite and jammed up the overflow. The De Freitas are also using up all the bog roll in Ambridge. Just thank your lucky stars you're not at Bridge Farm, Mr. and Mrs. De Freitas's. The lethal combination of recycled bog roll, a reed bed sewage system, and endless leek and potato soup, and you'd have a bum hole like a grated tomato. Harris Hunt, the world's busiest policeman, was pottering around the village trying to sort out his women's cricket team. He said Anisha was promising talent and Molly Button had fire in her belly. That's probably where Tilly Button set her leggings alight. Using the age-old tactic of the enemy of my enemy is my friend, Harrismont gave them the option of Darrington or women. Women, grudgingly, won. Now they're all terrified that they'll start catching periods and wearing eyeliner. FYI, Toby, if you have to ask, is this a boyfriend test? Then you've already failed it. He helped Pip deliver a calf using some rope and his trousers. Then all the cows ran away from Brookfield because they were fed up with Toby talking about burgers in front of them all the time. Pip was bribing everyone she could think of to keep quiet about the fact that the whole of Ambridge was full of loose cattle, playing the games machines in the pub, swimming in the pond, breaking into the bins outside the village shop and spraying Shula as a heifer on the wall of the bull. Here's a joke for you. A horse walked into the stable, said it had a headache, and before it knew where it was, Anisha had taken its eye out. She didn't even anaesthetise it. She just got Pip to talk about social media to it, and then bingo, Cyclops. Linda has speed gun envy. One whiff of someone in Edgley with epaulettes, and she's gone all Robocop. I think we can confidently expect her to be stalking around the village with a water pistol, a pair of binoculars, and a stopwatch, shouting, "Speed kills!" I'm going to change my message to be like Justin so that it says, I or a member of my staff will call you back. As my only staff is the dog, the chance of a callback is not likely, but you know, it sounds good. Anyway, he summoned Fagash to the Dower House to discuss the frankly unbelievable scenario of Miranda Rogering her personal trainer. God, it's like hearing that Sue Lawley goes to Nando's. However, the upshot and outcome of it all is that Lillian is the lucky recipient of the golden ticket. Yes! The great good fortune and honour of being the life companion of a philandering pillock with a vengeful wife set to skin him to the bone is hers. Well done, Lillian. You are set to spend the rest of your life in Willy Wanker's chocolate factory. Good luck. You're going to need it. The end.
That thing of doing your personal trainer, that's ridiculously common, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm.
So unlikely. Miranda sounds like she's never had sex ever.
Well, yes, but there is.
She, I mean, just yeah. I know it's a common situation, but I can't imagine anybody looking at Miranda and thinking, "Well, hey, I'll give that a go." You know what I mean? Kind of, you wouldn't, would you?
Well,
because you just she looks like she'd rather slap you across the back of the knees.
Well, number one. Whilst you said this, the thought came into my mind that back in 2000, I bumped into this personal trainer type bloke who told me on the quiet he was sleeping with Vanessa Feltz. And he was about 10 years younger than her.
And oh, is he the guy she's now with?
Yes. Black guy. Okay. Is about 10 years younger. She lost a shed load of weight and she was married with the kids at the time, and it's the power loose.
She lost, in that case, she lost 13 stone and half a house, but anyway.
But you know what, it's the power though, loose, and power and money. She had celebrities. Would he have taken up with her in an ordinary setting? No, but here was a woman who had, she was at the top of her game then. She was you know, on TV, in the newspapers, etc., etc. And she was powerful. She led him financially into a life which he couldn't dream of. And don't get me wrong, you know, if they're still together after all these years, it became a love match. But it definitely didn't start off like that. Here was somebody who was rich and wanted him. So I do understand why a personal trainer would at least start off with somebody like Miranda, because it's just so incredibly new and exciting, and it's a heady cocktail of that with cashola, you know. So yeah. It does make sense for me.
Blimey.
Mm.
Well, I still don't think she sound like she's
also, you know, the person who we are socially, professionally, isn't the person who we are necessarily romantically.
No, I suppose not. Just still saying. Not convinced. But anyway.
Yeah. Anyway. So Am I right then, vis-a-vis Justin and Lillian? Was I right? Because I was always like, oh, let me.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know, because I haven't heard Sundays yet. It's still... I really, really didn't like it. We ought to talk about this when we do the calls. I really, really didn't like it because I felt as if it's like going, oh, by the way, you know that house that you just lost out on because the other person had more money. Well, it turns out, you know, they've cleared off now, so it sounds like you can have it after all. It's kind of like she's got the runners up prize. I know he said, I chose you and everything, but he only chose her when Miranda gave him an ultimatum.
Yeah, but by all accounts, and I am straying into Sunday territory, and I think you mentioned this at one point, it seems like half of what Lillian was attracted to actually was the subterfuge, was the furtiveness. It's not to say that she doesn't like the guy, but the very fact that he's now said that you are the centre of all of my sexual attentions, she's not exactly jumping for joy.
You know? Right.
So,
good.
Yes, exactly. So it's complicated. This one will run and run, folks.
Yeah. People keep talking about Matt coming back.
Wouldn't that be lovely?
Oh, I miss Matt. Oh, should we do Claire from Clapham?
Oh, yes, please.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
Hi Dumpty Dum, it's Claire from Clapham here. It's Wednesday, I've just listened to Wednesday's episode and so much I want to say. Firstly, Pip and Toby, I think it's fantastic that Pip has got Toby out of bed at stupid o'clock in the morning to make himself useful and help her catch cows. A few more months of this and I'm suspecting that Toby will go and find himself a girlfriend who doesn't require him to be useful at early hours of the morning and gives him an easier ride. So well done, Pip. You might drive him away with this kind of behaviour and it'll be the best move you ever made. Secondly, all those cows mulling about in the road, or we'll just have to leave them in the road after all of this, you know, plot predictions laid down about people driving dangerously through Ambridge. I'm sure that I wasn't the only person with their heart in their mouth thinking, oh, my God, at any time now, someone's going to come careering down the bend and there'll be dead cows and some kind of major incident and the cover will be blown and Pip will be in trouble and all of this. And then literally nothing. It was all fine. And a part of me was kind of disappointed. What does that say about me? I don't know. Finally, oh, Lillian being told off by her mum. What a situation. I don't even know where to start. First of all, Lillian's old enough, surely, to tell her mum to get out of her business. And Peggy, really, you think that people would judge you badly because Lillian's carrying on? It's not like she's always been in like faithful, monogamous relationships with people. You know, I first came to the Archers I first knew her when she was having an affair with Matt before Matt left his wife. I don't remember Peggy ever giving a telling off about any of the other relationships. And as someone said on Twitter, she was delighted when Helen moved in with Rob, even though Rob would, you know, only just left his wife. And it was pretty obvious that Helen had been having an affair with him. So she, I don't know, it doesn't seem consistent to me. And why hasn't Lillian got the guts just to tell her to mind her own business? You know, why does Peggy think she's got the right to invite Lillian over and have her second best china and tell her off? Goodness me. You know, she's still going to be relying on Lillian to run her to the hairdressers and off to see her mates and all that. I think she's got a cheek. Anyway, so that was an interesting one. I do hope that when I get into my 70s, I'm not being told off by my mum. Yeah, good luck with everything. And I hope that you win lots of podcast awards. I love the show. And it's great to be part of the Dumpty Dum community. So keep up the good work. Cheers.
The cows in the middle of the road. Yes, it was a bit odd that. It's kind of, I couldn't quite see what the point of all that was, apart from, as Claire said, to drive him away, to drive Toby away and go and get a girlfriend that doesn't require him to do physical things first thing in the morning. Not that sort of physical thing. I know what you mean about Lillian is old enough to tell her mum to get lost, but I don't think any, I think people just don't, do they? You know, Peggy is such a force of nature, and she does it to people that aren't even her family. She makes them feel bad about things and does a grand dame act. She's like a PG Woodhouse aunt, basically. You get summoned and then you get this dressing down.
To be fair to Peggy, right, she's the matriarch of that side of the Archer's family. And when people are skint, they come to her.
Yeah.
So why shouldn't she then dole out a little bit of advice? People can't have it both ways.
No, but it wasn't advice about I want you to be happy. It was you're making me look bad.
True that, right? And yeah, I'll give you that. But still, if you're sat on high on the pile of money that she is and all the stuff that she's been through, you know what? She can dole out advice, wisdom, bon mots, whatever she wants. And people just have to like it and lump it as far as I'm concerned. Because when she shuffles off this mortal coil, they're all going to be the richer for it.
Yeah, fair enough.
I don't know whether I ever told you this, Luce, right? But my grandfather, my mum's dad, he had a debilitating illness in the last 18 months of his life. And in a typical West Indian way, he goes to the hospital, goes in hospital for, I don't know, about 6 weeks or so. And the doctors turn around to all the family and say, he's incurable. Obviously turn around to him and say, he's incurable. We need to release him so he can die at home. He never acknowledges to us that he's actually dying. All my aunts never actually say to him, we know that you're dying. It's typically West Indian way. Everybody's just pretending like everything's all kind of fine. And my grandfather is as black as the Ace of Spades. His skin are just so darkened. And my grandfather was just the most amazing man in that he taught himself how to read and write and loved Swift and loved Johnson and all the just beautiful man from the inside out. Mad fundamentalist Christian, mind you. But anyway, he, on the day that he died, all my aunts said, everybody needs to come to the house because he looks like he's going to die. And we all turn up. He's not acknowledging it, that we've all just turned up. And that we've turned up because he's going to die, sorry. And it was the most beautiful evening with myself and my cousins and my aunts. And we all trotted into the room one by one because he was in bed. And he just gave out wisdom from on high like Solomon. And just saw into the future. It was the most eerily beautiful time. And he... You know what? My grandfather told me about my future life and it was just so scary and with just a smile on his face. And then I was in London, I had to drive up from London to go and see him. And then he died and this was about 10 o'clock when I got the summons into the room. And it was like a proper royal ascent. It really was, you know. Can I now speak to Roy Field now? And I trotted in. All right, Granddad, how you doing? And he goes, sit down, grandson.
You're right. Of course I'm not, you idiot. I'm dying.
And he says, I know you're creative and there's things that you want to do and whatever and you're not going to be around and blah, blah, blah. This was like 15, 16 years ago, Luce. Like, he just so saw into the future.
Did he say you were going to do a podcast about the Archers, which will frequently mention maps?
Exactly.
Wow.
He died 3 hours later. Just amazing. So, I don't know, right? I just think, listen to Peggy. Is she perfect? No. But she's seen a lot. And it's kind of absolutely ruthlessly in character for her. For Peggy Archer. Peggy Woolley, in terms of she would do this. And actually, there is loads of... I was going to say moral ambiguity. There are many people that will take an absolute hard line against infidelity. And you know and I know, I'm woolly on this at best. And we all have messy lives. And what you've got to do is try not to hurt others, and it's unavoidable to be an adult and to be in an emotional relationship with somebody without hurting them. And it's just hard and it's a bit messy, and I don't know. And that's all I'm saying.
Do you know what's made me very happy, though?
What's that?
The idea of Peggy Woolley finding out that you've just compared her to your black grandfather.
And I tell you, I got given two of his old suits, which I know I have mentioned before in a dum-de-dum. But anyway, yeah. But that's the reason why we have our elders, you know, who have seen a little bit of life. And sometimes it's uncomfortable, and sometimes their opinions will be old-fashioned and outmoded and won't, you know. But sometimes they'll be spot on, and they'll be spot on more times than they won't. Anyway, I'm going to shut up now because we need to be pretty quick with this show, because you're interviewing somebody pretty important. Who's next?
Next, we have Julie from Pickering.
Hello, Royfield and Lucy. It's Julie from Pickering here. Phew, I am so glad I listened to last night's episode of The Archers. Now I know what I need to use my second best china for. Been wondering for years now, what do I use my second best for? Of course, my first best china is for royalty and the Queen visiting. So, second best, I'll polish it up at the ready in case anyone I know is having an affair. Meanwhile, I'm just off to polish up the third best for the conversation this evening with my husband about him leaving the toilet seat up. Toodles!
I agree. I have got no idea. I don't have best china, second best china, or third best china, or even plastic. I have plates that I use. And when they're dirty, I wash them up and I put them back, and then I use them again the next day. I do not understand the point. The most I'm ever likely to have in my house probably is about 20 people. If I have more than that, I would buy more plates. I would rent more plates or whatever, you know, get them from Waitrose or wherever they do them. There is no need to have all this stuff everywhere. Stuff. But anyway, yes, Peggy and her second best china. I did like that retort. And Lillian recognising it for the dressing down that it was going to be. Oh, you've got the, you know, ooh, got the second best. You've got the best china. Second best. And Julie, your cat is a bit of a star. Have we upset it in some way? Is it not keen on either the Archers or us? But it seemed to be extremely unhappy. Glyn full of love now.
He's my man of the week, that gentleman.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. It's Glyn here, calling in on Thursday evening after the episode with the cricket EGM. Some listeners may remember that a couple of weeks ago I said that a merger with Darrington might find its way into the cricket story. And indeed, the scriptwriters found a way of getting Darrington into the storyline. And we now know that Will Grundy would rather bat for Darrington than play with women. Well, that's enough said on that subject. Other things happening in Ambridge, which are causing me to think a bit. Will Helen tell Tom that Kirsty's had a bit of a meltdown, in which case he will be heading back to Ambridge faster than you can say the girl from Ipanema. And it's all gone very quiet on the Brighton front. I think it's about time we had a bit more or a proper resolution to that storyline. Anyway, that's enough for this week. So thank you very much to all the Dumpty Dum team, and keep recording and keep producing this wonderful podcast. Thank you very much.
I hope that Helen does not tell Tom about Kirsty, because Kirsty isn't acting oddly. She isn't acting out of character. She certainly isn't acting out of character for a woman who's had a miscarriage. She's acting exactly as you would do. So there's no need for Helen to go sticking her oar in and ringing people and interfering, because we don't want Tom to come back. So don't even think it. Otherwise, bugger will. I know Brighton has gone very quiet. This is Both annoying and disturbing. I kind of get, it's almost like there's a lot of storylines at the moment that have like started and then stalled. It's quite weird. It's like, sorry, William's trying to sneak in to get some.
I can hear you.
You're going to need more than that, love. There you go. It's big homework. You're going to need more than that. That's it. It's like a lot of storylines have kind of started, been left idling as car, you know, like engines, and have now stalled of their own volition. The Brighton thing seems to have done that. I mean, I do hope it does. It go somewhere? Who knows? Who cares? But it would be quite annoying to have all this Grange Hill palaver about people on heroin and then it just bloody packs up anyway. Claire Howard.
Hello, Lucy Royfield, and this is Claire from Hertfordshire. I haven't rung in for a while, but I thought I'd ring in and just have a discussion around Lillian. I've been having a discussion with myself over the last few weeks. I've always been Team Lillian. I love Lillian. I think she's brilliant, but when she started with Justin, I became concerned really early on that she would get hurt. And that was my main concern. And then recently, when they almost were caught at the Dower House by Justin's wife, Miranda, what I found really difficult to hear was Lillian laughing about it so much as she was putting her fur coat and wellies on and going out into the garden. I thought her amusement at almost being caught and hurting another human being so much, as I'm sure it would have hurt Miranda, even if she is a horrible person. I just thought that was a bit distasteful. But other than that, you know, today I've just listened to the Omnibus and I was quite happy to hear Justin's left Miranda in favour of Lillian. I thought it'd be far more complicated than that because I thought all his finances would be caught up with his wife, a bit like soon to be ex Sir Philip Green. So I didn't think he would leave Miranda, and if he has, then I really hope they're going to be happy, and it will be, you know, perhaps not so dramatic in future. Anyway, that was it. Just wanted to talk about Lillian, really. Thanks very much for the podcast. Still really enjoy listening, and take care. Bye.
Relieved about Lillian. I am not sure. I am not relieved about Lillian, but if what you say is, well, I'm sure it's correct, Royfield, but as you said, it's not sounding as if she's exactly leaping up and down with delight at the prospect of life as the chatelaine of the Dower House again. Then hopefully she will kind of be a bit more sensible this time. Separate bank accounts, not roping him into her business. Remembering that the house is hers, asking him for, she's not going to charge him rent, but, you know, not getting so carried away, maybe. There's still an awful lot to be cagey about in between the general jubilation. I mean, I do love Lillian and I do want her to be happy. But you know, I'm not sure whether I think she, yeah, I don't know.
There is something
the way he did it,
yeah. There is something deliciously, and this is going to sound a little bit pretentious, but it's actually spot on the money. There is something deliciously post feminist about Lillian, which is the reason why people love her, people being the listeners, and kind of allow her this the moral ambiguity, the messiness of actually what she's doing. And somebody had to explain to me over the weekend what post-feminism actually means, in that she is a woman who is seen as being somewhat independent and strong, but is not afraid to show her vulnerability, but actually will use unconventional, not feminist means actually to get what she wants. So on the one hand it feels decidedly kind of old-fashioned and she is croquettish around men and whatever, but actually she holds and wields much more power and is actually aware of it, and it's that kind of mixture of you know kind of feminism and, you know, kind of pre-feminist kind of womanly wild.
Yeah, but so she didn't speak. Do that so well with Paul, did she? Matt's brother.
No, true.
She was rapidly heading into a Helen situation.
Yes. So now it's Andrew Horn.
Greetings, Earthlings. Andrew Horn here. Well, Uncle Kerry, you've been very naughty this week playing with us. We know there's going to be a car crash, someone hurt. And every time now roads and cars are mentioned, I'm thinking, is it it? Is it now, this episode? So first of all, we had Kirsty getting all wound up and then heading for her car and thankfully dropping her keys and being found by Helen, because I thought that's just not what Kirsty needs now to be the cause of a fatality or involved in a crash. And then we had cows on the road and Pip and Toby, and then they were off. They were all done. We thought, oh, that's all over. And then another lot of cows on the road. So, yes, naughty Uncle Kerry. Could have done without that. That's all, really, this week. Speak to you soon. Bye.
I know. They keep banging on about this car crash. We had cows in the middle of the road. I thought, like Claire did, it's going to be carnage, cars, cows everywhere, barbecue beef, not a sausage. Nobody got hurt. Blah, blah, blah. And now she's stalking harassment to try and get some sort of traffic calming thing and God knows what. I'm still worried about that railway. James Jeffries told me off and said, and as our sponsor, I should pay slightly more attention to what he says. Mm. But he said, a railway, because he loves a bit of train. And he said, railway would be brilliant. We must have that. But I am very dubious about it, that they're going to revisit this flipping, blooming steam engine line or whatever it is. But yes, they cannot keep talking about these vehicles and the speeding and all that without there actually being a thing. There has to be a thing.
Well, it's so obviously been signposted that you'd think maybe there's some level of willful misdirection going on here. Because they have, you know, they do have form for leading us down a garden path, these script writers. But it's so been done with such a heavy hand that I can't, you know, it'd be interesting to see where this goes.
Yeah.
Because kind of what you want is just somebody just to get run over, don't you? And
I've got a list of people I'd like
What you want is the visceral shock of that, because, you know, because it kind of comes out of nowhere, just like the car would hit that person out of nowhere, it'd hit us as the listener out of nowhere.
Yeah, but that's what happened with Mark Hebden, wasn't it?
Exactly. Whereas this, they're saying, you know, this has been going on for a couple of weeks now.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
We
even had a near miss with Lily, didn't we? And Linda, when she nearly drove her off the road. Ran her off the road, I mean.
Yes, exactly. So, yeah, and poor Lily was visibly shaken afterwards, wasn't she? Let alone Linda. So, so I don't know. I don't know.
Goddess Diva now.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. It's Goddess Diva for the third time, being interrupted by young people with their music and their kazoos and their joie de vivre and their being young and shit. one is now, I kid you not, sneaking off, and the other one is threatening to play the kazoo. Welcome to life. Welcome to my life. Okay, so the other one is now singing into a hairbrush. Tiana and Noah, I love you both, but shut up. So I'm not even talking about the cricket team this week, because boring, like, fair. I've seen and heard misogyny before, can't be honest. What I did want to talk about was Kirsty and how my heart broke for her, and how Kerry, our wonderful Kerry Davis, has done this so well. When I finally cried after losing my two, it was because there was no batter mix. Actually, there was batter mix in the co-op, but they'd moved it. And don't even judge me for not making my own Yorkshire pudding, okay? Because I just had two miscarriages, so shut up. The thing I really wanted to talk about, though, was Lillian and Justin. at last, Lillian and Justin. I've always said I will be team them as long as they Justin treated her well. I would have no beef with him. So the beef is completely gone again, because he actually put his money where his mouth is and chose the right woman. And you know what? For anybody like Peggy who's going to go, oh, she was wrong, oh, it's morally wrong. Do you know what? Anybody who's at the Dull Dumpty Dum meetup will know about the anarchist. Well, I have to, I'm going to admit right now that he stole me right back. So whatevs, peeps. Love is good. Being miserable is not. And you can take your sense of moral outrage and stick it where the sun don't shine. Right, I am off to go and have a Witherspoon's breakfast, because having dressed up a storm at the weekend and been very hungover yesterday and still gone football, I feel I deserve it. Love you all, and I'll speak to you later. Goddess Diva out.
Goddess Diva is all happy because Lillian is all happy, and Goddess Diva is happy for the same reasons that Lillian is happy. So Lillian and Goddess Diva are happy. That's the end of the call. But I have just this second.
Well, she's just taken up with a rich businessman who's based in London, but is travelling up to Cardiff. Yeah,
having just finished an interview with Sunny Ormond, who plays the great Lillian Bellamy, which we will play at the end of the show. I don't know, she's kind of a little bit, she's not completely convinced that Lillian would be happy with Justin as a married lady, I don't think. But she said she just wanted her to be happy. But anyway, we will see. But at the very least, we're glad you're happy, Goddess Diva. And there's also Witherspoon.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Toss salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy.
Greetings, Lucy, Royfield, Yokel Bear, and all Dumpty Dummers around the world. Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here. As I was preparing porridge this morning, I asked handsome husband how he wanted it, knowing the answer, of course, and he replied, salt and milk. I'm a traditionalist. I was also reminded of when the two of us go out without Angus and the little one scurries under the sofa and we have to drag him out from undercover and into the light of day. These two disparate thoughts connect to the great women in Ambridge cricket debate. Come on, boys, how silly can you be? And I'm especially talking to you, Will Grundy. You've let me down, as I have always supported you in your biblical feud with your brother. Yes, Lucy has had greater insight into your views than I have. And I don't think that Nick would be very happy with you as well. Script writers, you've dusted Will off just so he can be an asshole. Sigh. Kudos to Harrison for dragging the team into the modern era, even if it took a bit of subterfuge to do so. Sometimes that's what it takes, as well as persistence, to achieve social progress. The counter-argument of, well, there's no girl that's good enough to play, of course rang hollow. What difference does that make in giving them the opportunity to demonstrate that they can make the team? I'm sure this summer, Will and the other men will be cheering on Pip and Anisha when they're batting or bowling stars in Ambridge's win against Darrington. Looks like it's a long time until the hazy, crazy days of summer here, as we'll be digging out from a good bit of snow by the time you listen to this. Talk to you soon.
We talked before about the importance of radio and the Archers to people who are partially sighted and blind. We had Amy Gilbert, who emailed us last week, and we said that we would have the actor that plays Jazza, hopefully, on the show at some point. And we've had an email from Sue Hanrahan, who said, I absolutely love your walkie-talkie podcasts, especially as I'm currently enjoying life with my 8th guide dog, Jessie, who is 6 years old, and a golden retriever. Oh, sorry,
Wait a minute, you're reading this out on the right podcast?
Yeah, I know, I've just realised that. No, but then she goes on to talk about Dumpty Dum. Shall I take that bit out?
No, it's all right.
Are you sure? Sorry. I also love Dumpty Dum and the Archers, which I have listened to for years. I work full-time, have 2 grown-up children and 2 grandchildren. I can first remember listening to The Archers when James Bellamy was being born, which is going back a bit. I keep in touch with many of the people I was at school with, and The Archers is a frequent topic of conversation between us when we contact each other. The Helen and Rob story was frustrating but gripping. I would love to hear Jazza on Dumpty Dum and I think the person who plays him is amazing. I'm so glad I've got my computer because it means I can keep up to date with all the podcasts, which I wouldn't be without. I love Dumpty Dum. Please keep it going. Sue Hanrahan. We will, Sue, we will. And I love the fact that you use the archers. It's a really good way of, if you haven't seen anybody for a while, or you've kind of got like an old school friend or whatever, you don't have enough day-to-day contact to just sort of catch up and say, so how was that thing you were doing last week? If you haven't maybe heard from them for a couple of months, to use the archers as a kind of a conversation conduit, I really like that.
No, I had there's my old junior school, primary school, infant school, even in Brum Greenholme School. There's a little Facebook group set up for the years 1973 to 1980 when I was there, and
is that boy on it that you were horrible to?
Oh gosh, actually there is a picture of Stephen Tarmey. But what somebody from Greenholme sent me a lovely message the other day saying, I listen to Dumpty Dum.
Oh
yeah, I was like properly you know, thrown for six. And she says, but I'm just too scared to become a caller in her.
Whoever you are, call in.
Yeah, please.
How can I ask you intrusive questions about Royfield's childhood unless you call in? I will interview you specially.
Please, please, please call in, because that's just like too lovely. Too lovely by half. But anyway, there's a little picture of me on there with me and my mum, because what people are doing are posting all their, you know, old school pictures.
Yeah.
And I don't have any of my school pictures because I lost my my album, my photo album, in all the moves that I did in the early 2000s and stuff. Aww. But I just, there's one little picture of me and my mum in my little short trousers and slip-on shoes.
Put it on Twitter.
All right, then I'll put it on Twitter. But I tell you what, my mum's proper gorge. Proper gorgeous, my mum. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, is that emails done?
It is.
All right, emails done. Now it's time for us to have a brief little break. Camp coffee for me. Lucy will probably be on the gin, and you can listen to a trail for walkie talkie, which is rather good this week. Can I big up walkie talkie? I do it every week, but can I big it up?
Yes.
Lucy's talking to a gangster, but he's got a heart of gold, even though he's a bit of a wrong un. It's very, very, very good. Oh, and then this week I spoke to Hardip Singh Kohli on my thingy.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
He talked about finding love in this new modern digital age. Oh. He says it's a bit hard. It's a bit hard.
Yeah.
In an uncertain world, there is always music which can be listened to in good company. Welcome to Friday 15, the show where we speak to friends and interesting people to the backdrop of great tunes and allocate 15 minutes to both.
I mean, I was 8 years old, interesting, the same age as the Dragon King's daughter when she comes out of the sea. But what was happening to me when I was 8 years old was that I was at the hands of a paedophile in a classroom for a year. And
For me, and I think the reason that I somehow managed to win in the end is that for me, it's about an economy of the three things that bring a song together. Kiss, mouth open like
Catch up with me speaking to friends and interesting people every Friday afternoon on Friday 15, which you can get, of course, from a podcatcher of your choice.
Hello, I'm Lucy, and this is Walkie Talkie. I walk my dog, Basil, pretty much every day in a foresty bit of London. I have been doing so for about 4 years, and I meet people that, as a dog walker, you talk to people. If your dogs get on, you tend to just, you say, which way are you going? Can I come with you? And you just sort of amble along. And you can end up having the most extraordinary conversations, partly because you are walking side by side and facing front, so there's no embarrassing eye contact. If things get a bit heavy, if someone starts talking about something that they find emotional or difficult, then you can always divert your attention onto the dogs and relieve the tension a little bit. We've seen, as a group of dog walkers, we've seen people get pregnant, have children. We've seen people whose dogs have become ill and died, and the owner says, oh, I can never have another one. And then in a couple of months' time, they appear with a puppy and everyone's delighted to see them. And we've seen people's marriages break down, new romances start. It's a lovely way to start your morning. It never fails to give me something nice to think about, something interesting to think about, even if it's not nice. And having a dog is a sort of a universality, really. The people aren't all like me, as I hope you'll realise over the course of the series.
Leading up to the 1860 election, in walks a gentleman by the name of Abraham Lincoln, who is the Republican candidate. The Republicans to the South represent the ending of slavery. And Lincoln, despite the fact that his sentiment was always in the beginning to preserve the Union rather than to abolish slavery, becomes the lightning rod of anti-Southern sentiment. And he ends up winning the election in 1860 with no support from the South.
The Guardian, Manchester, Tuesday, November 20th, 1860. Summary of news, foreign. The details respecting the presidential election furnished by the New York journalist, not complete, but they not only assure us of Mr. Lincoln's election, but show that the Republican Party has obtained far more than the requisite number of votes for his return. It is calculated that New York, Pennsylvania, the New England states, New Jersey, and the Northwestern states give him 171 electoral votes, or 19 more than the majority required for the election, the total number of electoral votes being 303. It is not improbable, too, that this majority may be further swelled by the result of the elections in the Pacific states of Oregon and California. We have no account of the manner in which the Southerners have received the intelligence of Mr. Lincoln's election. The next advices will no doubt be filled with fierce Southern declamations and protest, but it is not very likely that any Southern states will do anything more than talk loudly about secession.
Listen to the first show exclusively on Mixcloud today and subscribe to us on iTunes from Washington to Obama.
10 American Presidents, the new podcast from Royfield Brown.
Hello, Dumpty Dumpty, Yokel Bear here. I've got a bit of a croaky voice and a sore throat, so let's see if my voice lasts until the end of this social media roundup. Going to start with the forum this week. Landless Gentry has posted an enormous post about everything. Looks as though Landless Gentry has done a massive catch-up of listening to Dumpty Dum and has posted their thoughts about just about everything that's happened recently. So get yourself over there, have a look at it. Opinions are plenty to be commented on. Also on the forum, and I think it's worth mentioning now, Podcast Awards. Yes, please. There's links on the forum and on the Facebook page. Please get voting. What's it they used to say? Vote early, vote often. So what else has been going on? We spoke a lot about Kirsty on the Facebook page this week. Karen Valerie Hodgson has definite views on the whole Kirsty thing and posted quite a long post about how she feels that this is yet another instance of the scriptwriters changing a person's character to fit the storyline. We saw this throughout the Rob and Helen plotline, characters being changed, Pat, for example, and she feels that this has kind of happened a little bit with Kirsty over the last couple of weeks, and it's pointed out that the Archer should be character-driven and not plot-driven. Karen Cunningham said, though, in a way it's good that they've kind of bought the Kirsty going into a bit of a collapse. You know, it's happened early. As Karen said, another episode of Shiny Happy Kirsty trying to remember the way to a nightclub would have been too much to bear. Fiona's Siobhan Powell also commented about that Kirsty is going through the six stages of grief, denial, anger, etc. But her only complaint is that not everyone goes through the stages as written. You know, that sometimes it's a bit mixed up. And also as well, Sue Gedge is saying that, well, you know, maybe Kirsty was a bit rude to Roy, but maybe he needs to face a few home truths. But she thinks that it's heading for a Kirsty-Roy clinch. Well, maybe, but I don't know. I think maybe Jazza might be in the offing now. Because, you know, he came round with the DVDs. I mean, who can resist Tango and Cash as you know, whatever. But maybe that's just me. Also, our own Millie Bell pointed out the person who was phoning up about the accommodation to Eddie, Harriet Vane, a lovely little nod to Dorothy L. Sayers, Lord Peter Wimsey. So, hat tip there to Kerry Davis. Please, more of this, Lord Kerry. That would be lovely. Also, as well, we've been talking about Lillian and Justin, because it's been the big story of the week, really, isn't it? Barb Danielson says, yes, please, can this be over? Let it be over so that we don't have to listen to Justin's unsexy Winnie the Pooh voice anymore. Thank you, Barb. I think you've just ruined Winnie the Pooh for me. Ruth Halliwell says she'd like Lillian to claw back some control. And basically, kind of, you know, it's time for Lillian to have a say and for Miranda to it's Miranda's turn to listen. Nancy Dickey is holding out for Return of Tiger. She says, my hope is that they get it on again, only to be discovered in flagrante in the Dower House by Tiger, freshly returned from Costa Rica or wherever he's been. Sarah Ping thinks that Justin's a bit of a caricature, a fierce businessman who meekly obeys the wife and plays away like a naughty schoolboy. Well, you know, by the end of the week, though, it kind of resolved itself, haven't we? The one comment really made me laugh, which was Gordon Jackson said, the image in the head of what Jenny must have seen when she walked in on them. I'm glad this is done on the radio and not on a TV show. I don't know, Gordon. I think sometimes my imagination is worse than anything that can be shown on television. So I'm not sure that works for me. One last thing is that on the forum, Candida Beeching has posted about a Dumpty Do, a meetup, maybe somewhere around Plymouth, but on April Fool's Day. Yeah, what a day to meet up. I may come down for that. Anyway, that's me with the social media roundup for this week. Cheerio.
Thank you for that, Yokel Bear. As always, a proper roundup of all things on the social medias, vis-a-vis dum-de-dum. Lucy, can we have some hashtag The Archer's Tweets of the Week, please?
Yes. Dawn Oliver said, I can't help feeling that Brian's position on the relationship moral high ground is a trifle shaky. Yes, I thought that. Sold, honestly. Then we had Joni M, who said, Miranda, the one horse of the apocalypse. Ray Smythe, who said, don't give Anisha a cricket bat, she'll have someone's eye out. Very good. Look, this is just very sweet, this one.
I just worked that one out.
Yes, yes. It all got a bit Peter Schaefer, didn't it? Laurie Inglis Hall, who said, I hope I never forget that my three-year-old son calls the Archers the Marchers and marches up and down whenever he hears the theme tune. That is so cute. And Tweet of the Week is from Shyama Pereira. My heart broke. Mother calls after the Archers. Have you ever thought of becoming social secretary to a rich man? On behalf of women everywhere, Shyama, I'm sorry.
very good. You know what, Lucy, I feel I just need to rattle through this end bit really quite quickly, because nobody really wants to hear this week. Well, they probably never want to hear the end bit anyway, because we've got Sunny, we've got Lillian to come, haven't we? So I'm going to do this at breakneck speed. dumdydum.com, go there, we've got a shop, you can buy stuff, it's awesome. Tractor, pin yourself to the map, it's awesome, you can meet other people who live close by who like Dumdydum and, more importantly, the Archers. Now, if you'd like to help keep our little show on the road, there are a couple of ways this can be done. You can donate by hitting the donate button on our website, or you can join us on patreon.com, and next week we'll run through the new Patreons that we have. This show only works with you folks. It works with you by not only listening, but also by writing us an iTunes review. We've had a few lovely ones recently, and in a future show, I will mention those. The other way this show works is by you contacting us. You can contact us via SpeakPipe on our website. I think I mentioned that before. It's called dumdydum.com. If your internet doesn't work, it's up the fritz, and if you're at work and you just can't be seen to be surfing for fun, you can call us on 02030313105 to leave us a telephonic message, just pretending you're speaking to a very important client. On social media, Twitter, you can find us where we're at dumdydum. Me, I'm at Royfield. Harriet is at Sambridges.
And I am not concentrating. And at Lucy V. Freeman.
On the Book of Face, you can join the Millie Bell and Yokel Bear show. Oh, and also you can join Walkie Talkie. Because Lucy's sneaked onto Facebook now, haven't you? You little sneaky person, you.
Oh, no, that's Millie Bell. She's doing it for me. I didn't ask her. She offered. She's so lovely.
She so loves you, you know. She'd never
love her. Well, it's a love-love relationship.
All I'm saying is she didn't offer to do any of my podcasts for me.
Apart from Dumpty Dum.
Is it because I is black? Racism, I call racism.
Victim status.
Now we get to the heart of the matter, the meat on our plate, which is our interview with Sunny, aka Lillian Bellamy.
Roy Field on the podcast has just described Lillian as post-feminist.
Oh, post-feminist.
Which someone had explained the term to him the day before, so he was very excited about it and decided that that's what Lillian was. But we were just saying that the scenes with you and Paul.
Yes.
She was almost heading into Rob and Helen territory there, wasn't she? There was a slight bit of his dominating her, him, her being frightened of him and that sort of thing.
Yeah. There was a little bit of that, actually. I suppose there was. Yes. I always found that such a fascinating story, really, because folk often used to say right at the beginning, you know, what was it about the character of Paul that, you know, made her fall in love with him and so on and so forth. And I always used to feel, certainly in the early days, of course, because it was radio, that actually both Paul and Tiger or Matt looked very, very much alike. And so right. It was her, it was the good side and the bad
side.
Yeah. With Matt, you know, he was not cold, but he was quite difficult to get hold of in many ways, whereas Paul, certainly in the initial stages, was very loving. And that was why she was attracted to him, because it was what she wanted from Matt, but actually she found in Paul. And that was the great thing about radio, of course. As actors, they look very different. But, you know, that was the thing that worked for me as an actress playing Lillian. Because, of course, she'd had this long relationship with Matt. And so what was it about this character of Paul that pulled her away in that direction? And it was just the fact that he could engage with his feelings in a way that Matt couldn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yes, we went into slightly different territory, didn't we?
We did, yeah.
Yeah.
So we've had, well, Lillian's had some exciting news this week.
Oh, I know. Woohoo! No, she's not pregnant. No.
Oh my God! Can you imagine? That would be ace. Lillian IVF. Bloody hellfire.
Well, yes, I know. I mean, yes, not be down with the feather. There, she was fully expecting, you know, that was the big heave ho, and that was the end of her relationship with Justin. And then, wow.
I still don't think it caused as much.
Up his heart.
It still didn't cause as much comment as the scene with Peggy, where Peggy decided that you were only worth the second best china, not the best china. It was a category 2 telling off, not a category 1, because then you get the best china if it's category 1. God help you if she gets a silver teapot out. It's all over.
We know we're really in trouble.
So because when I went to see your one woman show, which I thought was ace, and I would advise anybody else in the country to go and see it, because it's touring. Where are you, Stratford-on-Avon?
Yeah, well. In fact, the one that you saw is my first one-woman show. And in fact, I'm in Colchester this weekend with that particular one at the Arts Centre in Colchester. Uh-huh. But this second show, which is the one that I was talking about before, is called Dorothy, the Airings of an Archer's Actor's Aunt. And that's playing at the Bear Pit in Stratford-upon-Avon on the 23rd and 24th of We sold out for the 24th, but if anybody is in the area, we still have tickets for the 23rd, and it's the Bear Pit in Stratford-upon-Avon. And if you go into the Bear Pit site, they'll give you all the details. You can actually buy tickets through the Royal Shakespeare Theatre. That's where they're selling the tickets, but you can also get them online. But it's a great show. It's written by Jane James. It's very funny. She's completely different from Lillian, so different from Lillian. She's a northern lady who runs her broadcasting channel from the old folks' home in which she resides, and she's a cross between Margaret Thatcher and Pat Routledge as Mrs. She's a wonderful character.
Because you do a really good Patricia Routledge, don't you?
Well, I don't know. I try. I don't know, love. I do try. But we've had great reviews for it. So if anyone is in the area, you know, do come and see that one. But no, the one that you saw is the one I'm at Colchester with. That was my very first one, which I started about 5 years ago, which is much more about the Archers and Lillian, amongst other things, of course. But yeah,
because you asked the audience there, would you like Lillian to marry Justin? And we all dutifully went, no. There was this huge kind of roar of disapproval.
Yes.
So do you, I know that you know, but if you were giving advice, if you as the actress were giving advice to Lillian, should she marry him?
Well, if I was giving, advice as a punter standing outside, I would say, yeah, he's a catch, you know. I mean, he's lovely, he's loving.
Well, he's a catch now, not after Miranda's ripped him off for everything she could get her hands on.
Well, you see, this is the problem, isn't it? Yes, this is what we have to be careful of. But he's obviously very loving, and I mean, he's a pretty wealthy guy. So hopefully, you know, there'll still be a few coppers left by the time she's shreds and so on and so on. But whether she will or not, I really don't know, because she's still in shock, I suspect, about all this, you know, thinking that you know, her days were numbered in terms of having a permanent relationship.
See, I hated that. I hated the way that he could call... First of all, she'd been called to her mother's office, like she's the headmistress, and then she got called to daddy's office as well, you know, and you sort of think, why should she just tell him to stick it? Why can't they come to her? Why is everybody ringing her up and saying, be here then and be here, you know?
That's not very
post-feminist, is it?
No, it's not really. It's not really. But I think she just thought that the writing was on the wall. And as she said in the telephone call, well, at least, you know, he's wanting to tell me to my face, really, yeah. You know, that it's all over. So, and she knew, I guess, you know, to a certain extent, she was in the wrong. She was having an affair with a married man. So there was a little bit of that. But anyway, it was all very happy and all lovely and great fun. And she would believe it.
Lillian will now be richer than Jenny.
Well, isn't that marvellous?
Will drive her berserk.
It will. So that maybe dear Lillian can have this fantastic kitchen, yes! Just like her sister's got a fantastic kitchen.
She can
kitchen.
Have the upgraded Albion.
Oh, dear.
So what did... Because I know that you, when you went for the interview for Lillian, you practiced the laugh in the bath and everything, and you didn't think that you were going to get it.
No.
So what did you think about the character? How did you approach getting to grips with her?
Well, it was an interesting journey, really, because as with all these things, often, you know, the producers have an idea, they have an outline of what they want. So, you know, I knew that she was a gin-swigging, cigarette-smoking, man-hunting gal. Mm. I mean, that was my main brief. But I realised that in order to make her have a life, a really living, three-dimensional character, you know, there had to be much more to her than that. So it was really a combination of me, producers and scriptwriters. And I think in a way, it's like a chicken or egg situation. The producers and the scriptwriters are waiting to see what you're going to do. And then you're waiting to see what the writers are going to give you and how the character's going to develop. But I did work quite hard at the beginning to try and find, as I say, a more three-dimensional aspect to her, because, you know, nobody is that extreme as a character. There are usually reasons why people behave in that way, and I needed to find that out. So sometimes with scripts I tried to not manipulate scripts, but I tried to show maybe a more vulnerable side to her sometimes in scripts. You know, you get a script and sometimes there are different ways that you can play it, and I tended to try and go for the more vulnerable sides at certain points when I knew that I was going to be playing against a more extravagant aspect of Lillian, so that we started to get a more rounded character. And to try and find her as a character, I had to sort of look at the fact that, you know, she liked the gin and her father actually was an alcoholic, and that she actually was quite vulnerable as a human being. And I still think that she is. I think Lillian is a little girl in a way inside, and that's why she acts so outrageously often. She's very vulnerable. Yeah. She's insecure. And of course, as she gets older, she gets more insecure because, of course, you know, the looks, so on and so forth. And I was given some lovely storylines, you know, to be able to show, hopefully, the listener lots of different sides of the character. You know, that was great. And then it was wonderful when she was paired with Matt, with Tyler. And I think, you know, Vanessa Whitman at the time saw the possibility of these two voices. Because, I mean, that's in radio what you've got, these two voices working together, which they did. And we had some great storylines, actually, Kim and I, who plays. You know, and it was a very volatile relationship. That's what I loved about that one. You know, it's quite sparky.
You weren't Pat and Tony, were you?
No, absolutely not. And, we had some real good fun with it all. And then we had all the emotional storyline, you know, when he went to prison and all that. And we had some really great scenes. So I've been playing it now since 2000. So it's 17 years. And I can't quite believe, you know, how it's gone so quickly. The time's gone so quickly.
Really?
Oh, really? Oh, really, really quickly. Really quickly. But what's the glory of being in something like The Archers is that, you know, you're very rarely, as an actor, with a character for as long as we are in soaps, whether it's TV or radio. So you get a chance to really get to know them and to really get inside them. And she really is my alter ego. If one was in a situation where people were asking me, maybe as Lillian, about things, I know that I can ask or respond very easily as Lillian now. She's so far into me, into my psyche, that there's no sort of no difficulty with that, really.
Because you said in the stage show, you said that once Lillian was asked, it said, "Pass me my slippers," and you said, "Oh no, that's wrong." Yeah,
she wears slippers. No,
she'd wear mules.
She'd wear mules, you know, with little sort of fluffy bits on the front.
Yes,
and no, she wouldn't be seen dead in slippers. But that's the glory of getting to know your character really well. And obviously, we have a lot of writers, lovely writers who come in and write for us and the actors. But you know, inevitably, we have new writers coming in who know less about certain characters and others. I mean, it's a huge vehicle that they have to get their heads around. And this was one particular experience. It was quite a new writer, and it was a domestic scene between Lillian and Matt. And you know, there was this line: "I'm going to put my slippers on." You know, and she wouldn't wear slippers. But the writers are very good about that. The producers are very good about that because they understand that you get to know your character really well. Also, you know, and often go with it. And that's how The Darling came to be. Really, you know, often she's saying, "Oh, darling," and that was a combination really of writers and me. Suddenly that became a little bit of a catchphrase, like the laugh is her sort of signature tune in a way, isn't it? Because on radio we only have the voice to create this three-dimensional character, and if you happen to be playing a rather flamboyant character, it can be quite tricky because you need to find little techniques or tricks to suggest to the listener the flamboyance, the fact that somebody is quite extravagant, maybe in the way they dress and so on and so forth, which is why if the listener listens very hard, often, particularly in external scenes, you'll hear a clip-clop sound accompanying me because I've got my stilettos on. Ah. I have my clippy-cloppies in the studio because, you know, she probably would never be seen dead unless she was riding the horse without her stilettos. So it goes in at a subliminal level in a way for the listener. But, you know, it's little tricks like that. That one can bring in. And also with me, with the voice, I needed to try and find a voice that suggested a kind of Ginny Segretti quality. So I tend to use is it more like that, sort of, you know, on the break of my voice, which kind of suggests a voice that's quite lived in.
Really. Yes. That's a very nice
Way lived in voice, really.
Yeah. Well, how? Which bits of you are like Lillian?
Oh, gosh, that's a good one, isn't it? Which bit of me I like Lillian? Well, you know, I like people. I like a good time. I don't like gin, which, course, her drink is her tipple. G&T, darlings, is her tipple. But no, I'm not keen on gin. I like a pint of ale.
A woman after my own heart.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I love it. I love ale. I mean, I just think that's great. So yeah, I'm not sure that Lily's into ale particularly, although she likes cider from Eddie Grundy's cider shed. But ale. I like an unusual ale. Yeah, not G&T. Anything else that's like me? Well, I'm frightened of horses, and she's a great horsewoman. I don't like horses. She's supposed to be the most wonderful swimmer, and I don't like, you know, my feet not touching the bottom of a swimming pool. So I don't know. I don't know, really. I think I'm quite vivacious in some ways, I think. So
I think Lillian has a theatrical quality, a deliberately theatrical quality, which you'd think, you know, when you'd imagine that when she met people, they would look at her and think, "I wonder if she's an actress," because she sort of has that star. She has a bit of a, you know, like Winston Churchill said, "We're all worms, but I'm a glowworm," and Lillian's a glowworm, isn't she? She's got that radiance sort of thing.
She absolutely is. She's a good time girl. You know, she likes a good time. She lives for the moment, you know, she doesn't care too much really about the consequences of things, Lillian, which have been disastrous at various times in her life. But it's quite a nice mantra to sort of live by, really, you know. And she's constantly shocking the village, and that's quite good, really.
Thank God for that.
I know that
it's not a delinquent teenager that's doing it. It's
Well, I know. You know, I was laughing the other day because I thought, you know, as an actress, I've had more affairs after a certain age in my life than I've ever had when I was younger, which is absolutely marvellous, and still they're going on. It's marvellous. Yes, for the older woman, yes.
What do you think what would you like to see the future holding for Lillian?
For Lillian, Well, I would think lots of dosh, lots of money, so that she can live in the manner in which she's accustomed. Yes, just to be happy and to have a good time, really, you know, with a lovely man, whoever that may be, it has to be said.
Oh, I think you know something.
No, I know no more. No, I don't. I don't. It's just that I suppose with Lillian, you never feel that things are always going to run completely smoothly.
Or that anything's settled, stayed still for longer than a fortnight. Yeah,
that's it. That's the sort of nature of her. But we truly don't know. And actually, we were taken by surprise, both Simon and myself, you know, when we got those last scripts, and of course, because we heard last Friday, and certainly in the omnibus, you know, when he declares his love for her. We were both quite amazed when we got those scripts and the way I thought it was a clever twist to the storyline, really. Yes. But we genuinely do not know often, you know, from 1 month to the next, what is actually happening. And that's really several reasons, because of the confidentiality of it, you know, within the programme, but also because I think, you know, our editors and producers like to see the way a story is developing and listeners' reactions to things. So they like to keep an open mind, you know, about things, really.
I'm going to ask you to do the laugh at the end because I want to see if we can turn it into a ringtone, because that has been one of the most... We wanted Kirsty's scream when she was jilted at the altar as a ringtone, which would be a bit horrendous if you're on the bus and that goes off. And Lillian's laugh. But we just wanted... nothing prurient, just audience request. What exactly was going on when Jenny burst in on them in the... Well, there was a lot of heavy breathing. And there was a lot of zipping.
And there was a lot of zip activity, wasn't there?
Yes.
There was a lot of heavy
up
breathing.
Up or down, that's what we couldn't tell.
There was a lot of duvet rustling and a lot of zips going up and down. It was actually very funny to record. They're quite tricky, those seats to record.
Sure.
We have a sofa bed. Do you know what I mean?
Ooh.
Oh, yes, it's all marvellous. We have a sofa bed.
The rumpy pumpy couch.
We have a rumpy dumpy. And our lovely spot girl, I think it was Ness, I'm not sure at the time, but anyway, you know, it was opened out into the bed and we have the duvet and everything. And we did have, you know, the zip literally sort of very close to the microphone going up. It's very, because it's very technical. It's incredibly, incredibly technical. And there was, yes, a lot of sort of heavy breathing. And I think I was given the note right at the beginning of the scene before anyone actually said anything. You know, could we have a little bit of heavy breathing, Sonny? You know, to sort of suggest something's going on, but not quite sure, maybe. But
there was a lot of conjecture on social media about what could have been going on.
Well, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised.
It has been fabulous talking to you. Thank you so much. And I would reiterate to all our listeners that they must go and see you, because it's such a good show and it's just such a laugh. It's a real laugh.
Well, yes. So just to say, on the 18th, if anyone is in the Essex area, I'm at Colchester Arts Centre, and then in Stratford the week after, on the 23rd and 24th at the Bear Pit Theatre. So, and come and say hello. If you do come, for goodness sake, come and say hello. You know, always lovely to meet the listeners.
You'll regret saying that after they're all queued up.
No, we won't.
Right, give us the laugh quickly.
Okay. All right. Have to take a breath in. Okay.
Oh, I love that. Thank you so much, Sunny. Yes. I will leave you to get on with your evening.
All right.
Thank you. Lovely to talk to you.
And you. Lots
Take
of love.
Care. Bye.
Bye.
You're so lucky. You've got to interview everyone's favourite character.
I know.
Why couldn't I interview her too? Is it because I'm black?
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Yeah.
Fair enough. See you next week. There you go, we're done.